Hello and welcome to a Search CRM podcast on creating customer value with Peppers and Rogers. I'm Lauren Hoyt, site editor. In the August installment of this podcast series, we're happy to have Don Peppers joining us. He'll answer questions from Search CRM readers on building trust with customer strategy and customer equity in the short term and the long term. Thanks for joining us, Don. Take it away.
Hi, it's Don Peppers. First question, what is the optimal amount of time to wait after a customer's first contact or sale before sending a reminder? For example, we provide corporate services and would like to send corporate gifts to our high-value customers after a delivery of service. We hope this will remind the customers of our service and that they will remember us for future purchases. So what's the optimal time to do this, beyond which the customer may forget us? Is it 3 months, 6 months, or a year? Well, it depends on whether this is the first contact or, you know, a repeat sale. There's no fixed rule for this. In a business-to-business setting, I think a good guideline is send a follow-up gift or piece of information more or less immediately after the first contact, within a few days, maybe a week or less. Now, this follow-up should not necessarily be a gift. That is not in the way you're thinking. I would say, if it's at all possible, sending additional information, sending a report, a white paper, something that the customer would find of interest or useful, something that they would find of value more than, say, a bouquet of flowers or tickets to the opera or whatever, I think it's a much more valuable way to use that opportunity. Now, after a sale, let's say it's an unusually big sale, or let's say it's the first time after several months and the customer bought something, I think a follow-up call might be in order. And this kind of call or contact, email if possible, would be really useful, especially after any sort of service operation where there is anything that anything unusual that has happened with the customer needs to receive a follow-up call. And again, this needs to be pretty much immediate. So, for instance, if a lender and a customer negotiates a fairly large loan or investment of some kind, an unusual transaction, in that case, it's very important to find out from the customer if everything went okay. Did you understand the process? Was there anything we should have done differently or should do differently next time? And that's what Martha Rogers and I would call complaint discovery, there where you're using the follow-up contact as a means basically to be sure that there's no unwritten or unspoken complaint on behalf of the customer. Because most customers aren't going to complain, at least not to you. They'll complain to their colleagues, their friends, and so forth. Now, if I have a valuable customer that I haven't heard from for a while, let's say, and I don't want that customer to forget me, and it's been a couple, 3 months or longer, I think a follow-up contact of some kind does not necessarily have to involve a gift and probably should not involve gift all the time. In fact, the time to send a gift is only more or less immediately after the contact or the sale. The follow-up 3 to 6 months from then should be in the form of some kind of information or inquiry, something more business-related, I think, with respect to the customer. If you want to stimulate business from high-value customers who are inactive and you're looking at a marketing promotion of some kind where you're going to offer some kind of inside discount, in that case, I think it's very important to make it a by-invitation-only operation. You're a very valuable customer. We've got a limited supply of this product. We're making them available first to these valuable customers, and that kind of thing. So, you know, there's no right or wrong to this. And if you're worried about it, then do a little testing. It's not hard. Take your customers every other customer do a follow-up and every other customer don't do a follow-up and see what happens. And or every other customer follow up 1 week and follow up 3 months and see what happens there. It's really not that difficult to get a reading on what the right operation is in your area. But keep in mind that customers are not ciphers. They're each individually different. And so to the extent that your salesperson, the person who's relating to that customer, knows something about the customer or thinks that 3 months is too late or too early, I would pay close attention to the salesperson on this or the account manager because people are different. And there's not going to be any single right answer for this question. Here's a question. I currently work in a call center of a corporation that sees a large surge in volume of calls when new marketing promotions are launched. We have an agreement that requires the marketing department to inform us of promotion details 2 weeks in advance so we have ample time to recruit and train staff, prepare materials. Could you suggest financial and non-financial violation penalties should the marketing department default on this agreement? Or is there a better way to go about working with marketing? We don't want to turn away calls that result from these promotions. Well, classic corporate friction, right? The first suggestion I would have is, yeah, marketing and the call center, they're on the same side. You guys are on the same side of the battle here, okay? You're allies, not enemies. And the first suggestion is check with your supervisors before you think it wasn't marketing that let you know. It's possible that marketing thinks they're letting you know by advising somebody in the call center organization and the word somehow isn't getting down or isn't being translated into the right amount of planning or preparation. So the second thing is if it really is marketing not letting you know in time for these, then one thing I would suggest would be, why don't you invite a representative of the marketing department to sit in on your monthly staff planning meetings? I assume you have monthly staff planning meetings where you sort of outline the routines and the shift volumes that you expect and so forth. So invite them, and hopefully they'll invite one of you guys to sit on their marketing planning meetings themselves. If all else fails and you can't secure cooperation through being nice or being cooperative or being part of the team, one thing you could do to get their attention would be to begin keeping a record of lost opportunities. If call volumes increase in a way that could have but wasn't anticipated because you didn't get an adequate notice of the marketing promotion that's being launched, why don't you make a note of all the calls that are lost and the calls that are imputed lost through extra hold time? And compute the financial cost of this in terms of lost marketing opportunities, and send a memo off to marketing and copy the marketing people's boss, sales and marketing VP, advising how much money was lost in this particular campaign due to insufficient call center staffing because of no advanced warning, no prep. That's the best I could suggest, but I would only suggest doing that to get somebody's attention. I think the goal here is to come up with a solution that is a win-win for you and for marketing, so that marketing gets a bigger bang for its buck and you have a more adequately staffed call center. I have another question. I have a question from a person who says, I'm interested in the subtle difference between a contact and a customer. The real world is full of people, i.e. contacts, who buy products either as individuals in the B2C world or as representatives of an organization in the B2B world. I'm somewhat new to CRM, but I guess I would view it as more of a business of contact relationship management. So that would entail the workflow process being identify an inner contact, determine opportunities for that contact, contact buys the product, contact is now a customer. Do you see flaws in this logic? A customer is always a contact, but a contact is not always a customer, and in this approach, a lead is just an embryonic stage of an opportunity. Are there organizations or best practices structured around this approach? And the answer to this question is yes, The logic is great. There is, in fact, a whole discipline of B2B customer relationship management that is somewhat different from traditional consumer relationship management. The truth is, B2B CRM is probably older and more established than consumer CRM, primarily because even before computers made it possible, sales reps would keep records of individual contacts because it was worth it to do so because you're selling to a big business. Martha Rogers and I actually wrote a book about this whole distinction, and the title of the book is One-to-One B2B, Customer Development Strategies for the Business-to-Business World. We suggest there are 7 basic differences between CRM in the consumer world and CRM in the B2B world. First, in the B2B world, you have relationships within relationships, and that's what the questioner is alluding to here. The contact is the actual person. Keep in mind that businesses have no brains and make no decisions by themselves. They are only legal fictions. They're collections of other people. It's the people that have the brain. And so in our 4-step methodology, identify customers, differentiate customers, interact with customers, and customize for customers, the IDIC method. In the B2B space, the identify task concerns itself a great deal with identifying the actual people within the business that have responsibility for the decision. Those people might be decision makers themselves, or they could be reviewers or approvers or specifiers, influencers. There's lots of different ways to do that. So, relationships within relationships. Second of 7 differences, really, is in the B2B space, you have just a few large customers, big organizations. And that means the statistical tools that are useful in B2C are largely not relevant in B2B. Third difference, account development selling. What I mean by that is organizations are complex, and it's much more beneficial for you to view a B2B company as someone who becomes a customer gradually. So that, I agree 100% with the logic of the questioner, a lead is just an embryonic stage of an opportunity. Martha Rogers and I would say an identified prospect is just a customer with whom you have 0% share of customer right now. And constantly you have to think about how to develop that account, how to make more contacts within the business-to-business organization. Another difference is channel complexity. In the B2B world, the channel distribution issue process can be extremely complex. You can have value-added resellers and IT business. You have installers and enablers. You have lots of people at different gates between the marketer and the customer. Another difference is what we call knowledge-based selling. Because the products and services sold in a B2B context are often highly complex, it's advantageous to base the sales process on educating and training the customers, and much more so in B2B than in B2C. Another difference is infrequent purchases. In the B2B world, purchases are likely to be more infrequent and farther between. And this characterizes a lot of business-to-business operations, and in many B2B companies, a large amount of effort is allocated in the CRM space to trying to service-size to create a continuous service stream that surrounds the sale, the occasional sale of products, so that you have opportunities to interact with the customer and maintain the relationship. And the final difference is in the B2B space, it makes a great deal of sense to help clients manage themselves. If you're selling to a business, one of the principal issues that any business is always wrestling with is how do I better manage my business? And to the extent you can fashion your customer relationship initiatives in such a way that will help a business manage itself, that's a very high-value offering. Here's a question. Is there any way to prioritize call center calls by type of customer? For example, if 10 calls are coming in, we want a VIP call to land first. Is there software or methodology for these particular calls to let us know who's calling? What do you think of the strategy? I think that strategy makes a great deal of sense. In fact, Martha Rogers and I advocate this strategy to call centers all the time. There are a lot of ways to identify high-value callers. Obviously, if the caller is calling from home and you can identify the phone number, then all you really need to do is link that with the data database you have, and if you've ranked your customers, you know you have a high-value customer. It's a little more problematic if a high-value customer is calling from, let's say, the office or from some other non-home or non-mobile phone number, and you can't simply identify them. Sometimes you can gate your high-value callers by giving them special numbers. So if you're an airline, the platinum and gold flyers get to call a special number, and that gates the call into a high-value area. There are software firms that offer applications that have fairly sophisticated ways to parse calls up and distribute them, the automatic call distribution, which considers the value of the customer in the call distribution process. We're not technologists, Martha and I, and I can't name these. I know for a fact, however, that Cordiant, for instance, has been doing this for years, almost since its founding. So my suggestion is, if you want to get a list of other software providers that have this feature, and I think many of them do, talk to your Gartner or maybe your Forrester rep.
Thanks to Don Peppers for joining us this month and for sharing his advice on creating customer value. Join us again in September for a Search CRM podcast with Martha Rogers. For Search CRM, I'm Lauren Hoyt.